This is Through the Pickets, a podcast proudly brought to you by the New Zealand Cricket Players Association, where we showcase our members' interests, achievements and experiences either side of the white picket fence, with more of a lens on their off-field endeavours. Today's episode features a through-and-through red and black to the core Cantabrian, who has spent the last decade representing the Kings and has captained the side since 2018, scoring over 4,000 runs in all formats of the game and taking over 100 wickets. 2021 was a particularly special year for Cole McConkie, who not only made his Black Caps debut, but he and his wife Sarah welcomed their first child, Lewis, into the world.
Oh, that's big. That's big. That's out of the middle. It's on the roof. There it is. Crunch from McConkie. Goes long and hard.
And that's exactly what he's done. Sneaks one past the bat of Devcich. McConkie picks up the second wicket of the day.
Oh, it's up high. It's up high, and that will be the winning runs for the Canterbury Kings. It'll bring up 52 for Cole McConkie. Excellent innings from the skipper. Finishes 50 not out.
Cole McConkie, captain of the Canterbury Kings, welcome to Through the Pickets, and great to have you along. Thank you for making some time for us too. Cole, as we record this, some big news for you, your wife Sarah, and your son Lewis. You've just started your own business. So instead of me doing the big reveal, may I ask you, could you do the big reveal? Tell us a little bit about it.
Thanks a lot, Dennis, and thanks a lot for having us on the podcast. Yeah, we're into week number two here at Blitz Fitness. Wife Sarah and myself decided to open up a gym down here in Christchurch and Horsball in particular. So yeah, as I say, second week underway and loving things so far.
So you've got Lewis, who just turned one, and you've decided to start your own business called Blitz Fitness. What made you and Sarah decide to get into the gym business with all the opportunities that are out there in the world?
Good question, Dennis. And with the wee one-year-old, it's certainly a challenge. Now, to be fair, we've been talking about the years, really, Sarah and myself, and the opportunity presented itself with a brand new building here in Horsball, and we thought we'd be mad not to take it. So that probably came about in about January, and it's been a project for about the last 7 or 8 months, and yes, just stoked to be open and operating now.
How did you find the process going from way to go? Like, how long from when you guys were having chats to we signed the lease form, and was there, when you signed the lease, did you go, oh my god, we're actually doing this?
Whirlwind process, to be fair. It was a new build, and I was actually filling up my car at the gas station. I said to the lady behind the counter, what's happening in the building over there? And she goes, oh, I got no idea, but there's the owner if you want to have a chat. So I went on out the back and had a chat with him, and he took me upstairs and we had a look around, and it was intended for a dual tenancy. He goes, oh, what sort of office do you intend putting in here? I said, oh no, I want to put in a gym. And I think he looked at me a little bit mad, and then we just got talking a little bit more over the next month, and things progressed probably quicker than anticipated, but I was, as always with the cricket season, I was quite keen to get it up and running and iron out a little bit of the cobwebs before the season starts, having to be away a bit throughout the season.
That crossed my mind as well. How do you balance cricket, family and the business now?
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge, but something I think has always helped my cricket in terms of having work outside of the cricket. And, it's such a mental game we play. Sometimes I don't know why we put ourselves through it, but it keeps us coming back. But it's certainly a challenge. But I think, that time management and putting stuff aside, quality family time as well to be busy, and it's nice to sort of work on a project that, as I say, my wife Sarah and I are really passionate about. We've got a couple of trainers on board, and they're awesome as well, and they're certainly going to be taking a little bit of the load throughout the season. So hopefully, fingers crossed, all things keep running well.
I know it's early days, but how's the first couple of weeks been? And I love the website, by the way. I like the that real sense of community, or come and join your sweaty community. Is that one of the little phrases on you, about us?
Yeah, that's one of our taglines. So there's certainly been some sweat poured in here already, and plenty of floor maintenance required. But no, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks, Dennis. It's been awesome to meet some new people coming through, and we've got members from all walks of life. I mean, we've got, you know, a 60-year-old lady that's just coming back from hip replacement, and we've got a couple of, you know, 20-odd-year-old league fellas that are, you know, pushing especially hard in terms of trying to push some rep footy. So that's the beauty of it, and that's awesome. You know, we're seeing so many different people come in, and everyone's just really excited, and, you know, that sense of sort of belonging and community that we're searching for. Hopefully, you know, we're just at the start of that, but hopefully we can keep pushing that forward.
I know you just touched on the community thing, but it did feel that it is a sort of place where it's got that balance of, you wouldn't be out of place whether you're someone that's quite serious about their health and fitness, or someone that's, you know, trying to avoid a triple bypass in the next couple of years like myself.
No, you're more than welcome here anytime. That's certainly what we're trying to you know, promote. And I think, you know, group fitness has got a bit of a stigma around it, where you've got to, you know, you got to be a high performing athlete to come and enjoy the class. And you know, we're trying to push that boundary in terms of, you know, group fitness. Yeah, you work as a group and you work in a group environment, but it's very much down to yourself and what your own goals are. And, you know, everyone, as I said, we've got such a wide variety of clientele, and making sure that everyone's coming in here for their own benefits, but also working alongside some new people and making sure that they're making some new connections and some new friends along the way.
Cole, you're quite entrepreneurial because you had a business with your dad before the gym. So how did the change come about for the gym? What was the conversation like with dad? Have you like ditched him or something? Thanks, Dad. Love your bike.
Honestly, that was awesome. Really, really, really enjoyed working alongside the old man there. And it came a time and a place where, yeah, we looked to sell that business, and it sort of dovetailed and nicely with the opportunity that was arising here in Hawesville with this building, and sort of the stars aligned with that timing, and that also, you know, worked alongside Sarah and I's mentality in terms of, you know, things have fallen in place like it's meant to be. So we decided to put our heads down and give it a good crack, but really enjoyed working next to the old man, and it wasn't all smooth sailing. We definitely had our differences, and sometimes, you know, probably butted heads a couple of times over a few decisions, but it was awesome. And we, you know, we get on really well, and yeah, so it was really cool, you know, a few years working with him.
As you were answering the question, I thought, could me and my dad work together? I was like, love him, but no, we would be clashing all the time. So working together, not too much of a problem. Like any organization, though, you might have the odd disagreement with a colleague, whether they're family or not.
Yeah, well, it was actually I think it was a Thursday afternoon, and Dad and I were going back and forth over a little bit of an argument, and Mum ended up bringing out the bloody gin bottle, and we had a gin to discuss it. So I didn't think it was getting that bad, but we talked it on over a drink, and, you know, seemed to find a solution, which was good. But learned a lot off him, and yeah, certainly valued my time working alongside him.
Without prying, Cole, do you mind me asking you what sort of business was it, along the same lines or something completely different to, you know, owning a gym?
It couldn't be further away from a gym. It was a commercial cleaning company. So we did all sorts of things from, you know, high scale commercial, you know, exterior, concrete polishing, all that sort of stuff. And then to move into a gym setting is a pretty, a bit extreme change, really.
Now, word on the street, and you touched on a couple of league players coming to the gym, is that you had a passion for rugby and rugby league. They were your first passions before cricket.
Yeah. Fair question, fair statement. Probably at times still potentially my number one passion. I love my rugby, love my league. Really enjoyed it growing up. Was fortunate enough, you know, to play alongside some, you know, really good mates as well, and still head down on a Saturday to watch them play and get a bit envious. But I know old folks would be pretty disappointed if I showed up to Monday's training with my knee in a brace or something like that. So I certainly miss it, but it's, you know, it's a great sport. And I think the culture here in New Zealand around the rugby's, you know, just, yeah, fantastic. And one I hope I'll be a part of after cricket days.
Anyone we might know of that used to play alongside? Because I know you're quite a modest guy, so you're not. I don't think you'd naturally get there and go drop a few names. But go on, feel free.
It's actually more of a league. League players have played alongside, so I didn't really go to one of the big major schools here in Christchurch. I went to Riccarton High School, but I was fortunate enough a couple of years to play some rep league, and played alongside a few boys that have played in, you know, a chunk of games in the NRL, some Matt McKilrick and Fa'amanu Brown. So it's cool to see them, you know, they were going really well over there in the NRL for a period of time with, you know, they both got around a few teams. So that was, you know, it was really cool to see them kick on.
So if you played a little bit of rep league, can I ask you what position you would have played?
I was a 5'8". I was a 5'8".
Hey, go Cole.
I was actually 5'8", and I wasn't the biggest guy on the park, but probably the last 20 minutes is where I shone a little bit more with a few tired legs rather than the first 20 minutes with the big contact, and I'll probably leave it at that.
That was one of the things I first noticed about standing right next to a rugby league field was, you know, that collision sound was extraordinary.
There's certainly some, you know, some great contact in league, and, you know, you'd be lying if there wasn't that fear factor. And that's why you try and line up with a couple of big guys either side of you on the defensive line, make sure that they help you out. But yeah, it's also like, you know, a bit that I miss in terms of that contact with the rugby and the league. And probably in Canterbury's cricket warm-ups, we play touch, oldies, youngies, and potentially some days you bring in a bit more of that contact than what you probably should. So it's it is always enjoyable.
Did you get Peter Fulton in there?
He's actually a very, very good rugby player. He played rugby at a high level, and when he was playing for Canterbury, when I was coming through oldies, youngies still, he used to run the cut of the oldies, and he used to have a couple of good wingmen outside of him and few options inside and out, and it was bloody tough to defend. So he's moved into that refereeing space for us on the touch field, but I certainly think he could, you know, still mix it with the best of us.
Do you play any NRL fantasy league, etc.? Are you a big fan? Are there a few of the boys at the Kings that are into it, or a few close friends that you do anything like that with?
Yeah. The boys love a picking comp down here, and so a bit of NRL fantasy and a few picking leagues across, you know, Super Rugby and NRL. And yeah, I'd love to say that I'm doing well at the fantasy this year in NRL, but big Maddie Henry's actually leading the charge. He's invested a lot of time in it, and it's been impressive because he's been obviously away on tour with the Black Caps and keeping in contact with the NRL, and I've been surprised that, you know, he's been making his changes each week and sticking with the form players. So it's been impressive. But I'm sure his wife Holly, he's probably spent a bit too much time researching it.
There are some guys, and I'm not saying this, Matt, there are some guys that have got too much time on their hands. Like, I play Fantasy Premier League, and some of my mates, yeah, I'm sure they probably do more at the Fantasy Premier League than they do at their job.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And there's actually a fantasy, Premier League set up in our squad as well. And I fear for some of those guys, because you're dead right. There's a big time investment in a tournament like that. Eh?
Broncos are your team. What made you pick them as your team as opposed to the Warriors? Or back in the day, in my day, Manly was a big Kiwi favourite because all the expats that played for them. So why the Broncos?
Yeah, good question. So I have some cousins over in Brisbane, and some of mum's sister lives over there, and we always used to go over there as young fellas in the school holidays, and they were pretty avid sort of Broncos supporters, so we'd just tag along to the games there and sort of naturally fell that way. Unfortunately, been plenty of tough years and starting to see a little bit of a rise at the moment, but yeah, that's sort of the reason behind it. No real affiliation for myself. It was more so my older cousin that I just wanted to get along with.
Amidst all this oval ball sport, you ended up coming out as a cricketer. So how did you get into cricket?
Right throughout, you know, playing footy, I'd always play cricket in the summer. Fortunate that I got two older brothers, and, you know, it was cricket in the summer and rugby in the winter. And then, yeah, just progressing through, I suppose, the age groups and the system here in Canterbury cricket. And, yeah, started to receive a few more opportunities in those under 17s and 19s years, and probably rugby started to level off and cricket started to improve. So, and with that came some opportunities and some opportunities to, you know, explore some different opportunities. And Paul Wiseman was our development coach here in Canterbury, and he talked to me about going over to the UK first year out of high school to play some cricket, which I did. And, you know, that was a great experience, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of other cricketers have done along their time. And, you know, ended up doing that for a few seasons, and that really obviously enhanced my cricketing ability, and didn't give me the chance to play rugby, which was probably smart for the body. But yeah, it was just a natural progression. And really, you know, it was the Canterbury cricket system that sort of pushed me and provided me with some great opportunities. So that was sort of my progression from, you know, especially high school and then into I suppose the professional game.
Were the brothers quite good at cricket as well? Was that sort of a bit of a driver to be, you know, better than your brothers in the backyard, etc.?
Yeah, certainly. So my oldest brother, he played a lot of premier cricket here for Riccarton, and that's, you know, I ended up playing alongside him quite a bit, and he would open the batting and I'd bat in the middle order, so I'd always give him a bit of shit if he was out by the time I was in. So yeah, he was a really handy sportsman. And the middle brother, he was his sport, he ended up finding the brown fizzy stuff, so he sort of dropped away from sport a bit and enjoyed the social outings on the weekend. But, you know, it was awesome, you know, playing with them growing up, and they would always push you, and being the younger brother, you'd always get, you know, the tough end of the stick. But yeah, a lot of fun growing up with those then.
At what point did you think this is a pathway for me? Was it that getting selected or that talent identification through Canterbury that it was like, oh, actually, I might be okay at this. This could be a career. Or was there a defining moment, so to speak?
Yeah, it was a funny one, eh? Like, I think, you know, that talent identification and, you know, just making small little steps through the Canterbury pathway, obviously, you start to think about the next step ahead and then the next step ahead, and, you know, you're making some inroads. But I suppose I didn't even think of it as a career opportunity until I was probably played about 10 games for Canterbury. You know, my first game when I debuted for Canterbury, it was more like a surprise. Like, I got the call from Bob Carter and said I was making my debut tomorrow. And, you know, I was just stoked to get one game. And then I played another. And I think over my first two seasons, I might have played about, you know, 8 or 10 games over my first 2 years. And I was just, you know, I was stoked with that. And I remember sitting down, Gary Stead moved into head coach, and he was like, rightio, like, you know, what are your goals for this summer? And I hadn't really put much thought into it. I was just, you know, stoked to be there and stoked to be in and around the environment. And, you know, he sort of pushed me in terms of being a bit more heightened goals, and, you know, that you've got an opportunity here to have a, you know, a really good career for Canterbury. And then I started to learn a little bit more through that with the Players Association and what they do for you. And, you know, and then it became silly not to put my head down. So it sort of, in a backwards way, it probably took me a few games to really realise that it was a career opportunity.
Was it Bob that guided you towards or nudged in the direction to focus on your batting and really pick your batting up? I read that somewhere about you had a moment where you were being pointed in that direction.
Yeah, it was. So I only played under Bob for my first year, and he helped me a lot with my game. And then Steady came in, and it was probably at that, pretty similar conversation point around that 10-game mark where he's sort of said about my goals. And, you know, I'd been playing, you know, a few games as a bowler, and I'd bat down at 8, and then, you know, then I'd get a batting opportunity. And I was sort of a bit like, I hate to say it, but a bits and pieces cricketer. And, you know, I'd you know, carry the drinks plenty of times, and I was just rapt to be there, and I'd do whatever role. And he goes, look, I think you need to, you know, invest some time into your batting and, you know, see a bit there, and if we make a couple of technical changes. So he actually sent me home one day with a bunch of DVDs to watch in terms of these different batters from around the world. And I started, you know, looking at their bat, and then how I batted and how I sort of link the two. And so I remember that winter we just hit so many balls, and he really, you know, pushed me hard. So that was probably the turning point from, you know, the direction of the cricketer that I started to become. Yeah, Steady really sort of pushed me in that direction.
In your cricket travels, you played a bit of cricket with and against Commonwealth Games gold medal shot putter Tom Walsh. Now, I watched him in the Black Clash and was just amazed at how good a cricketer he was. Timaru boys, and apparently he played against you and a few of the well-known Canterbury names like Tom Latham, etc. So was he not bad a cricketer then?
He was a very, very good cricketer. He Timaru boys, he was their franchise player, MVP. He opened the bowling, bowl these big induckers, bat in the middle order and whack it. But then it was really cool. You'd play against him. And then he was the same age group as Tommy Latham, Henry Nichols, Matt Henry, myself. And we would always play in the Canterbury age group stuff together. And he was awesome to play with, you know, 15, 17, 19. So he was a great man, you know, really talented cricketer, but just like an absolute larrikin off the park. What a fun to be around. And it's quite funny because, you know, us Canterbury boys, not anymore, but last season we were training in a high performance sport in New Zealand for our gym stuff. And he would always be in there and he'd always be asking about the cricket and poking and prodding around and seeing what's happening. And I remember like we'd be doing fitness testing and, you know, you'd be on the bench press and then he would just come in after you and just warm up on that weight and just he was always a physical beast, but seeing what he is now, he's like, you know, an incredible athlete. And really cool to see him doing, you know, such amazing things around the world.
Being named captain of Canterbury in 2018, how did that come about? And were you expecting it or did it come a bit unexpected?
Yeah, no, certainly wasn't expecting anything around the captaincy. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to lead a few of, you know, the age group sides coming through. And then I was really, you know, fortunate to get the opportunity to lead while Andrew Ellis was out injured for a couple of games at the start of one season. And then I remember off season, Gary Stead and then Brendan Donkers, who took over the head coach role, talked to me around the leadership opportunity. And I think, you know, the opportunity to lead Canterbury, you know, certainly an absolute privilege. So jumped at that with and something I really have enjoyed over the past few years.
How do you find the added responsibility? Do you enjoy the role or do you feel a little bit of pressure or what's your general vibe about being captain?
Yeah, no, absolutely love it, Dan. I think, you know, that just that clarity that it gives you, you know, like I'm probably an overthinker of some aspects of cricket and, you know, it's always nice, especially out in the park, to be thinking about, you know, some different aspects and where the game's going. So certainly enjoy the opportunity of that. And, you know, we're really lucky down here in Canterbury. We've got some quality thinkers of the game and quality people down here that, you know, I certainly bounce a lot of my ideas off. And, you know, it's a really good unit down here and certainly don't feel like, you know, you're the lone wolf, you know, given the ideas. We certainly, you know, come together, we have plenty of meetings and talk about, you know, strategy and stuff like that. So we're, yeah, really fortunate to have a really good group of guys down here in Christchurch.
Not trying to remind you of some tough times, mate, but runners up to the Firebirds and ND, the last two Super Smash finals, third time lucky in 2023 at the conclusion of the tournament.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me about that. The last couple of years, you know, we've had a couple of great campaigns. Unfortunately, fallen at the final hurdle the last two times. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, one better. And it's amazing, you know, we've come up against a couple of quality outfits in the final. And, you know, we've been playing some quality cricket and, you know, nature of 2020, Devon Conway in that, yeah, in the 2021 final, he had a day out, got 90-odd not out and brought them home in a run chase, and then Mitch Santner and Cardney Clark in that final on this year. So it's amazing how T20 can grow, and you know, I'm just stoked with how the boys are playing. You know, we're playing a really good brand and starting to really know our 2020 cricket. So, you know, put ourselves in that position again this year, and you know, hopefully we can go that one better.
2021 was a special year for you on a personal note, getting the call up to the Black Caps to play Bangladesh. Where were you and what were your thoughts when you did get that phone call?
Very special moment for, you know, family and myself. I was actually on the golf course when Steady called me with my father-in-law coming down the 10th hole. And, you know, regardless what happened the rest of that round, certainly, you know, great mood to be walking around the golf course. So, yeah, really special moment to get that call, and one moment I'll never forget.
And how was your first ball when you started bowling?
Mate, I was that nervous. I just wanted to land the thing and, you know, just chucked it up reasonably full. And the Bangladeshi Muhammad Naeem managed to chip it to a good mate, Henry Nicholls. So, you know, stoked to get a wicket on debut with that first ball. And, yeah, I was just rapt that the ball got down the other end because I was pretty nervous coming in there.
What a way to start your international cricket career, though. How much has the game changed since you debuted in 2012?
You know, it's changed a lot, eh? I think the even over the past, I mean, I don't want to sound like that wise old horse, because certainly hope I've got a few more years left in me. But, you know, I think just that overall, you know, professionalism of the game. I think, you know, the young guys coming through are really, you know, pushing the older guys hard. And it was an extremely strong competition coming into it in 2012. But I think at the moment, you know, the credit to New Zealand cricket and the six major associations, you know, it's an extremely strong competition. And, you know, that professionalism and the ambition from a lot of people around the country to play international cricket. And, you know, the six MAs right now are in such a strong place, and there's a lot of quality cricketers around, and makes for such, you know, a competitive domestic scene. There's all six teams are really strong and can beat anyone on their day. And I think it's, you know, it's just really exciting time for New Zealand cricket.
You mentioned it a little bit before when you first started getting into your cricket about the CPA and the level of support, etc. Like the game has changed, you would have seen some massive changes in terms of the support and the personal development and that whole wellbeing space for players across the last 10 years as well.
As much as, you know, it's a Players Association podcast, I can't speak highly enough about the work that, you know, the support that the Players Association gives us, and, you know, the resource that they give us. They really put, you know, the person first, which is, you know, an amazing thing to say about an organisation. And, yeah, they're just a quality outfit that keep looking to reinvest in the person, and, you know, making sure that the players' wellbeing are at the absolute forefront. And, you know, we're so fortunate to have a players association like we do here. Yeah, it's incredible. And obviously with the master agreements merging this year with the women's game and what's happening there is you know, really, really awesome to see. I know speaking to a few of the Canterbury women at training down at the new Hadley Centre, you know, they're extremely grateful for the opportunity. And I think you're just going to see that women's game grow leaps and bounds over the coming years as well.
Any stories from your playing days? Like in previous podcasts, we've had like Heath Davis bowling a real pie to batters. We've had a chance meeting with celebrities. We've had players naming their flat and getting matching tattoos. What's the vibe down with the Canterbury Kings? What's going down there?
There's a few practical jokes and whatnot get played along the way. I was fortunate enough to play with Hamish Bennett, who's just retired. Now he was always a good character, and there's plenty of good practical jokes around. But one I remembered from him was opposition opening batter was sitting on a pier, so duck in the first innings, and he was just friendly enough just to leave a nice little piece of fruit, a pear, on the boundary rope just to remind the batter before he went on out to bat. So he was always a good character. And probably the other stories I have for you probably aren't rated well enough to be put on here, sorry.
We can do an R18 podcast. It's crossed my mind. What do you think?
I don't know, mate. Maybe that's next season. I'm sure there'll be some other boys putting their hand up for that first.
Proudest moment for you, Cole? What's been a standout moment? It could be anything.
I think receiving my, you know, Black Caps hat in September last year. I think, you know, the incredibly proud moment, and, you know, it sort of dawned on me when we got over to Bangladesh and we had 4 days isolation in the room by myself due to COVID. And you sort of just, you know, you look back on it and you think, wow, like, you know, going to play for New Zealand, and, you know, you've always dreamed of that. And, you know, it was just literally a dream come true. And I thought, you know, although that Canterbury was such a special moment and a dream come true as well, putting on the red and black, and it is every day. I think, you know, probably if I had to put one, it would be wearing that silver fern for the first time.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your downtime. What do you like to do? You mentioned a bit of golf with the father-in-law. Are you, you know, into fishing, learning how to play the drums, anything like that?
Well, I don't have a musical bone in my body, unfortunately.
Right.
So sorry, Lewis. Sorry, Lewis, mate. You're going to be struggling there. But yeah, really, really enjoy fishing in the downtime. Unfortunately, that's tough to get it past the big boss now that we've got the wee fella. But really enjoy my golf as well. The guys down here in Canterbury, you know, we always have, you know, some good competitions and like to get out and about around the region and play some different courses. So yeah, certainly leaning towards that golf, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more played this summer as well.
And what's coming up for you in the next little while?
Nah, a lot of work around the gym, and you know, plenty of work to, you know, solidify what's happening here, and then, you know, all of a sudden, gee, we're almost at the end of August now, and you know, another season's upon us. I know, you know, everyone down here, we're talking about it this morning at training, how excited we are just to get back outside and train and play. So, you know, that season will come around really quickly again. But yeah, just putting my head down until that comes around again, really. So a lot of work to be done in the gym, and plenty more balls to be hit in the pre-season. So I'd love to say something exciting, but just knuckling down for me, sorry.
Oh, it sounds pretty exciting. You mentioned to me, have you got a PT session going straight after this this chat?
Yeah, so sort of, yeah, in about 5 minutes or so, we'll kick on into it.
All right, mate. Well, hey, look, I better let you go. Colt McConkie, thank you so much for coming on Through the Pickets. Best of luck to you and Sarah with the new gym and all the great milestones ahead with baby Lewis, and, of course, the upcoming season with the Canterbury Kings this summer, mate. Really appreciate you making time for us.
No, thank you very much for having us. Really appreciate it, and, yeah, anytime.
Through the Pickets is an NZCPA production. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and our members, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website nzcpa.co.nz. If you liked our podcast, please do take a minute to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. I'm Dennis Katsanos, and you've been listening to Through the Pickets.